Hello, and welcome to Ask Dr. Dawn. The opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers, and this is a program intended for education and entertainment. It should not be construed as a substitute for a medical consultation.
Let's go to some concerns about drug side effects from listeners, and we have a couple of people. Let's first take Deidre in Oaxaca, Mexico. I love the World Wide Web and the fact that you never have to stop listening to Ask Dr. Dawn, even if you move away from our area. Ask Dr. Dawn, low-dose lithium supplements. Though human studies have not yet been done, the completed studies so strongly suggest that low-dose lithium can help prevent dementia and Alzheimer's. What do you say to a 2 to 3 milligram daily dose while we wait for more studies? Also, although lithium in high doses can harm kidneys, I've heard that at low doses it can support kidney function, but I've been unable to find any studies about this. Have you found anything? Much gratitude from a long-term listener. Well, hello, Deidre, and much gratitude for you for your interesting question. So I did a search after I saw your email this morning, and I could not find any long-term studies for low-dose lithium, but given that the therapeutic doses of lithium are on the order of 50 to 100 milligrams in a 24-hour period, and low-dose lithium is 5 milligrams in a similar period, it seems unlikely to me that we'd be getting into any kind of problem. I think the reason it hasn't been studied is because it's so implausible that a dose that light would cause trouble. But I did find an article looking at dementia in humans, and they did show chronic lithium use in the elderly for the treatment of mild cognitive impairment and dementia. And this report is part of a 2-year double-blind placebo-controlled trial. 61 patients with mild cognitive impairment were randomized to receive lithium or placebo, and they monitored their renal function. They also looked at their white blood cells and their thyroid-stimulating hormone and their glucose and their insulin. So they really, and they checked them at 3-month intervals for 2 years, and they found no change in renal function at all. And these were very sensitive tests that they were using. They did find a slight increase in the number of white blood cells and a slight increase in the thyroid stimulating hormone, but not outside of the normal range. I think you have to look at low-dose lithium as probably a pretty safe thing. And you need to have a reason to be taking it. But a lot of people take it because it's mildly calming. And that in and of itself can improve your cognitive functioning. Because when your limbic system, if you're anxious or upset, the amount of glucose that is consumed by the front of your brain, your prefrontal cortex, which is where all of your executive functioning and your good common sense is, your prefrontal cortex is less effective, and your posterior and your limbic system and your sort of predator, I like to think of it as there's a lizard. And then on top of the lizard, there's a rat. And then on top of the rat, there's a cat. And then on top of that, we have a human. So we all have this sort of predator fight or flight. And if you think about fight or flight versus rest and digest, it's really pretty amazing. The rest and digest piece is just think cat on a windowsill, just chilling out, batting idly at the cord for the Venetian blinds, but not without much enthusiasm, just kind of every now and then. And then think of the Halloween cat, right, with the arched back and the spiky hair and the and that is fight or flight, getting ready to run or getting ready to attack. And that's the place where our front of our brains, the common sense part of our brains, turns off. I was reading about the new over-the-counter hearing aids, and I pulled a couple of reviews, and I was talking with the volunteers here at the station as well about that and got some more advice from Yanko. But what we've got is over-the-counter, off-the-shelf hearing aids are ready for time, prime time. You don't need a prescription. There are a lot of very good hearing aids. The review that I looked at basically listed the most affordable as starting at $98 and going up to $689. And that's about the $700 price, that's about a quarter of what you will pay for a prescription pair of hearing aids. And in terms of values for tinnitus, the best value is one called Lexi. That's $699 to $999, and it has a rechargeable battery, so you don't have to fool around with buying hearing aid batteries. That sounds like a really positive thing to me. And let's see. So I'm going to read you the handout here. Jabra Enhance, best overall, $999 to $1,900. Audien, A-U-D-I-E-N, that's the most affordable, starts at $98, but goes up to $689, presumably different features. Eargo, best invisible, $799 to $26.99, starting to get into prescription hearing aid territory there. Audicus, best support, so if you think you're going to need have technical difficulties, that's $13 to $24. And best for tinnitus, Elihear, H-E-L-E-H-E-A-R, best for tinnitus, $379. Now, and Lexi, best value, $699 to $999. Also, Apple earbuds can actually act as hearing aids, and that you can go online and figure out how to set up your AirPod 2, Pro 2 or your AirPod Pro 3 and use them as a hearing aid feature. I have not. That was not in the review that I read, and I have obviously not personally tested any of these things, but it certainly sounds like a good place to start and definitely save you a fair amount of cost. All right, as we move onward, we're going to take another email, this one from George in Santa Cruz, and the subject here is long-term methotrexate. Dear Dr. Don, I've been taking methotrexate, 6 times 5 milligrams, for 1.5 years to reduce immune response to psoriasis. I'm in my late 60s, looking at using this long term, and I want to know what trade-offs are being made to choosing to take this path. While methotrexate has improved many things, my new concern is lowered white blood count. My white count has dropped to just below the normal range, and the neutrophil dropped, but is still in the normal range. Anecdotally, scrapes and cuts take 2 times longer to heal fast, and common cold flus take 2 times longer to get over, despite getting all the vaccinations. My family has no cancer history. How will methotrexate change my overall health? Will it make me more susceptible to illness and cancer? What should I ask my immunologist to help make the best decision? The trade-off. About me, I'm in my late 60s, white male, and eczema is a family trait. Methotrexate benefits. Keeps my perpetual gluteal rash away, reduced my, non-symptomatic arthritis, but I think he must have meant symptomatic arthritis, or else how would he know it was reduced? Reduced gout flares, reduces and significantly reduces white fingers and knuckle enlargement, which of course is probably a manifestation of his arthritis. So we talked about, he's repeating what he said about things lasting long, colds lasting longer, and a little change in his white count. So, George, I went and I looked at the literature, and I found a lot of stuff looking at long-term studies for rheumatoid arthritis. And some of these studies went like 10 years. So that's good because 10-year data for rheumatoid arthritis is going to transfer mainly to you. It sounds like you have a little bit of psoriatic arthritis and a skin rash that bothers you. But I would say that let's talk about the methotrexate and let's talk about first, because that's your question. Then we'll come back and talk about the alternatives. So this was a rheumatology clinic that looked at 13 years of methotrexate. And they had 107 person years in the study. And severe laboratory and abnormalities occurred in 3 per 100 years. And those were an elevated liver enzyme or a white count below 3. So, you know, that's about 3% of the population. That means 97% chance of not having these. I would say this is a good quality study looking at the study. I also found when I was going through this about some alternatives. What you would need to do if you stay on your methotrexate, and since you've seen a drop in your white count in particular, you want to get monthly white count for a while and see if it stabilizes. The white count can go up and down if you have a virus or you have an infection of some kind. You can use up some of your white blood cells. So sometimes with viruses, it goes down rather than up, particularly the neutrophils. And so it needs to be watched. I think monthly would be fine. Probably while you're getting checked monthly, you could monitor for liver toxicity. And that's basically a comprehensive metabolic panel. That'll also check you for kidney problems. And liver and kidney toxicities are the things that are reported with methotrexate. But remember, this is largely with chemotherapy doses, and you're way, way below that. So yes, it can go sideways, but it usually doesn't. There's another there's a lot of information here that basically says that the risk is low and acceptable. I won't go into, you know, all of the raw material because there's a lot of it and it's not terribly interesting unless you're, you know, studying scientific design, but just say good designs. I wanted to talk about alternatives because if you are going, if your white blood count continues to drop, then there's basically a few other paths you can look at. There is a drug called apremilast, APREMILAST. And I looked at the long-term safety of that agent, and this was pooled data from over five-year analysis. So they had a lot of patients, and they had, oh my God, 500,000 patient years of exposure. They used a dose of 30 milligrams twice daily, and they were looking at it mainly in rheumatoid arthritis, but again, it worked. They found that there were very few significant side effects, and effectively, no problems with the liver or kidneys, no drop in the white count. The other side effects were present at like 1 per 100,000. So really a very, very safe drug long term if it works for you. So I would go there next. And I don't think that's a super expensive drug either because I think it's old but underused. I had never heard of it. The other thing that came out to me was you really are emphasizing the gluteal rash, and I'm wondering, could topical agents work for you? And also, I'd strongly recommend trying phototherapy. I've been reading a lot about phototherapy for a lot of things, including long COVID, depression, and recent studies have really been looking at tuning the light frequencies, and that there are certain frequencies of red light and certain frequencies of infrared that seemed to have literally healing properties. So you were mentioning the problem with getting wounds to heal quickly. So light therapy might actually help you as well. Now, there are drugs, and you've seen them advertised on TV. Etanercept is one that's broadly over advertised. And, you know, it has people on the beach, you know, being all covered up and then being all happy. But these are the drugs, Etanercept, Etamercept. These are the agents that have the cancer risk. And it's a leukemia, lymphoma, cancer risk. That's, I think, disproportionate unless you have very severe arthritis. Remember, rheumatoid arthritis is what they were targeting. Lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. These are serious, scarring, life-changing diseases. So you've got a lot to gain from getting on top of it. I'm not sure how severe your psoriasis is. It sounds like it might just be at the level of annoying. So you see what happens with your white count, but if it drops further, I just wanted to emphasize you do have other options. Got a great story for you about ultra-processed foods. We touched on this topic last week, and one of the things that came through loud and clear for me was echoing the lines of the great Michael Pollan, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. The more that something is processed, the more chance there is, among other things. My concern is for two things. One of them is any kind of grain and or fruit, because those have high levels of sugar in them. And so when you start processing them, you alter their properties. The mechanical processing of food, such as milling, grinding, or pressing, really has the biggest effect on carbohydrates. All carbohydrates except fiber digest down into sugar in the body. For most unprocessed carbohydrate, this process of digestion takes time. It raises blood sugar and insulin levels slowly and moderately, like a smooth acceleration from a traffic light, right? Just a smooth acceleration. But when you break up the food structure and break up those chemical bonds that otherwise your body would have to break down, and when you strip away the fiber, which sort of acts as a buffer in the digestion process, this industrial processing that we call ultra-processing greatly accelerates the digestion rate. So the sugar that these things turn into hits the system like a loud noise. And over time, the insulin response gets deaf and it doesn't respond to the high blood sugar as well. And you end up leaving the blood sugar in the bloodstream where it can do a lot of damage. So if you think this through, if you eat wheat berries or you eat steel-cut oatmeal, those are going to be healthier than highly processed grains like white bread or instant oatmeal. So I'm always oatmeal is fine. Do the steel cut oatmeal and freeze some of it and then thaw it out throughout the rest of the week. You know, just do one big pot of it. But the instant oatmeal really is evil. Whole fruits are way better than any kind of juice. And I do worry a little bit about about people thinking, oh, pomegranate juice, it's so healthy. Well, it's actually kind of a sugar bomb, and you shouldn't be drinking large quantities of it. You know, use some to flavor the fruit, but you'd be a heck of a lot better off buying frozen pomegranate seeds and throwing them in your salads and in your yogurt, honestly, from a health standpoint, because juices are processed foods. This processing has relatively little influence on the digestion rate and metabolic response to proteins or fat, however. So it doesn't really matter whether you eat steak or hamburger or soybeans or tofu or peanuts or peanut butter. It doesn't make any difference in terms of the physiology of the digestion. And the other thing I want to say is hidden additives. We are all aware that there is now microplastic in cord blood of infants being born, that we all have microplastic in our bodies, that it's found its way into the food chain. And my big problem is, it seems like the big blind spot that people have with the processing is that all that processing is being done through plastic tubes in tanks and grinders and things that are, you know, have a surface that's coated with plastic. And as those things get used, they're deteriorated. Once they're made, they're either put into plastic bottles or they're transported in big trucks, tanks that are lined with plastic. So the more processing and the longer it travels and the more packaging, the more microplastic has the opportunity to sneak into it. So when you make your own food from ingredients that are recognizably the original things, you're really doing yourself a great favor. And I think we can get a little insane about, oh my God, you know, that's ultra processed, and forget that the whole point about why it's bad is because it alters the physiology, and the associations are primarily with diabetes and obesity. And that's where the carbohydrates come in. That's where we need to address. And so one of the things that we want to do is really look carefully at what we're putting in our mouth. One of the things that I've heard for the last few years, and I totally agree with it, is sitting is the new smoking. Sitting is the new smoking. We've gotten rid of all of the passive cigarette smoke, and most of the smokers, it's become so inconvenient to be a smoker, and everybody starts smelling you after a while and taking a step back. So it's amazing how it's taken 30 years of work, but it's really changed. Well, we need to reclaim our bodies. We need to reclaim our movement, because just walking for 20 minutes a day can lower your blood pressure. Doesn't have to be fast. Doesn't have to be, make you break a sweat. Just getting up and walking for 20 minutes. And we've known this forever. And yet doctors prescribe exercise in this very, well, go get some exercise and here's your prescription. And it's like, no, start with diet, start with exercise. And a lot of the problems that are taking you to the doctor will melt away. So how can you get exercise? You're so busy. You've got so much going on. And one of the things that really struck me about this list of articles, and this article with lists of ideas, is this one of bouncing while you are while you're watching stuff on YouTube or while you're watching stuff on your phone. Instead of sitting on a couch or a gaming chair, get one of those inflatable exercise balls. If you're 5'8" or shorter, get the 55-centimeter size. If you're taller than 5'8", get the 65 size. And inflate that puppy and put it where you can sit on it, and make that where you sit when you are watching, when you are doing passive consumption of screen time. You can also roll yourself over and stretch, drape yourself backwards over the over the ball. That's a really good way to get an upper back stretch, because we've spending so much time on screens that our bodies, our chest muscles are actually shortening. And so opening up our chest wall muscles is a very, very important thing to do. Another thing to do is to put makeshift toning things in places where you hang out in your house. I have a couple of 7-kilogram weights in my bathroom. And every time I brush my teeth, I'm doing biceps curls and triceps extensions and deltoid exercises. And I have one of those toothbrushes that takes 2 minutes and it beeps every 30 seconds, so I can change arms. and I can put myself through, you know, a so-so upper body workout while I'm brushing my teeth. If you leave weights around, if you have a resistance band in your car, you're waiting for your kids to come out to pick up. Well, you can be doing something, or you can just get out of the car and stand on one foot and do some one-legged squats. Particularly if you're older, those one-legged squats are amazing for your balance, and you can hold on to an object until you get, you know, stronger. But then take your hand away, be ready to grab the door handle, but just get into a flying position with your arms out and bent forward and do little dips. And it's amazing for building both your balance and your leg strength. And one of the things we have to do as we age is we have to work on our leg strength. We have a test in geriatrics called the get up and go test, where we have someone get up out of the chair and walk across the room and walk back, and we time them. And your speed on the get up and go test correlates really well with your survival for the next 5 years. People who can't make I have to look it up. I don't remember the exact number of seconds, but it's something like 12 seconds to get up out of the chair, walk 10 feet, turn around, walk back, and sit back down. And if you can't make that, I put people on chair exercise where they just fold their arms across their chest and stand up and sit down and stand up and sit down and do that 10 times every hour. And it builds them back fairly quickly. Now, if you've got stairs at the office, by all means, climb the stairs. And think about how you can increase your exercise. Really simple. And I'm going to pick up the phone. Hello, this is Dr. Don.
I've already made my pledge, but going along with your philosophy of, you know, these exercises, and I'm 75, and I've noticed myself not exercising as much, and I have to change that because of my philosophy. And this is a philosophy that I've had for years, and now it's coming to fruition. Do, be, have. Whatever you do, that's who or what you're going to be, and you're going to have whatever that gives you.
I like that. It's kind of like you are what you eat, except it's,
oh, yeah.
You can do what you can do.
Yeah, and the most important part of the do, be, have philosophy is, what do you want to have? Then you can do what you need to do to be who you need to be, to have what you want to have. It's that easy, but it's also that hard.
And, you know, the science backs you up completely. Just doing 5 one-minute bursts of activity twice a day, that could be getting sitting and standing, calf raising, marching in place, stairs. I mean, if you've got stairs in your building where you work, you are lucky, because all you have to do is take the stairs and then use the bathroom on the first floor whenever you have to pee, and go up back, walk up back up to the third floor, and you're going to get your stair climbing over the course of a week. You're actually going to get some benefit there, and your legs will get stronger.
And that's why I like going down to the county building.
Yes, indeed, they have lots of stairs. I've always worked in hospitals, and hospitals have stairs too, and sometimes very elaborate mazes that you can wander through, which is also good for your cognition, trying to navigate some of those hospitals. Are there some other things that you do, any tricks that you do to increase your exercise? I've got a few more to share, but I want to hear from you.
I've got a Nordic track sitting here in my living room, and I know I should do it, but where's the motivation to do it? How do I get to that point where I actually put my 2 feet in the slots and the hands on the cords, and it's gone.
Well,
and I don't know how to get it back.
All right. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
John.
Try? Okay.
John.
John. Oh, excuse me. So, John, I've got a couple of ideas that have worked for me. And, you know, that's all I can share. First of all, I really love podcasts, like auditory podcasts, listening to people read stories or debate issues, talk philosophy. I like stuff like that. And I like listening to music, but I don't particularly like exercising to music. I like to dance to music, but I don't like to exercise to music. So, you know, exercise music never really did it for me. When podcasts came along, and now I have some wireless earplugs that I use that are awesome because I put them in and I put a sweatband around my ears so I won't lose them. And I go into another world. I get on that thing and I'm not on that thing. I'm making movements with my body and that's, you know, autopilot, but I'm listening to the podcast and my awareness is elsewhere. So it's no longer boring. It's just, you know, oh, the body is doing this and the brain is doing that. So that has really helped me. And it's, you might try doing that, having something that you really enjoy and that's engaging, and only listen to it when you're on your Nordic Tract. So it becomes kind of your reward is that you get another chapter in that book or you get to listen to another episode. There's so many good podcasts out there. It's just amazing. Rachel and I were talking about that earlier. There's really a renaissance going on of people being creative, and it's like in the old days, everybody learned to play the piano because there was no recorded music. So if you wanted music in your house, just like you're saying, you had to learn how to make it and then manifest it yourself because that was the only way you were going to get it. And now we're living in an age where it's easy to have a voice and to put that voice out there and find people who are interested in listening to your voice. And even if, you know, it takes months or years for the thing to catch hold, it's out there and it's going to find its audience. So you're the audience and you can find things that you really like and you can use those as a kind of carrot to get on that Nordic Tract. And if you can just do it for 5 minutes a day for 6 days out of seven,
that would change my life.
Well, you will start, it takes about, if you can do it for a month, you'll keep doing it, is the point. If you can do it for a week, you can do it for another week. If you can do it for another week, you can do it for a month. If you can do it for a month, you'll keep doing it. And you need to find some kind of reward, immediate reward, and you'll feel so much better and you'll adapt to actually liking it. But it needs to be, you need to give yourself that carrot. So, and it shouldn't be a food. It shouldn't be one of the four basic food groups either.
If I've heard this, and I believe it's true, that the more you exercise, the more mitochondria you produce within your muscle structure. So that makes the task of using your muscles easier. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. But wait, there's more. When you have more mitochondria, you also grow more muscle fibers, and the more mitochondria they raise your metabolic rate, and they suck glucose out of your bloodstream, so they reduce your risk of diabetes and cardiovascular disease, and they give you more energy and more endurance, and overall improve your sense of well-being. What's going on physiologically is when you push your muscles, they can't get enough oxygen, so they drop into anaerobic metabolism, and that is very wasteful, and it generates lactic acid, and your muscles get sore. So after a while, but that sends a signal to the DNA, to the nucleus, to make new muscle fibers, and it sends a signal to the mitochondria that, oh man, we're wasting all that energy by going into glycolysis. We want to be in oxidative phosphorylation, so we need to build, we need to build more muscle, and we need to build more mitochondria into the muscle. And it's absolutely true that it has all sorts of long-term benefits. Also, and this is, I think anyone who's older is worried about cognitive decline, and exercise is the best way to raise your levels of a hormone that's called neuropathic growth factor. So this is a brain neurotrophic growth factor. It makes you grow new synapses. And exercise causes your levels in the bloodstream to rise. It's actually made by muscles. And I think it's evolution. I think that if you're older, you're a waste of food if you're just sitting around. And so there's kind of this evolutionary thing. Well, if you're moving and you're contributing to the tribe, then we'll keep you alive. And so we won't shut down your energy, won't shut down your resources. I think it's an amazing dynamic. And, next time you go out to dinner, here's another good one I like. Park about a half a mile away and just stroll to the restaurant. Then you have to walk back. And so you've just walked 12 blocks and you've walked your carrot as you're going to the restaurant. And afterwards, your other advantage is you will digest the food better if you walk.
I when I go shopping, I try to find a space that is X amount more than I really could get into. So there's a space close or a space far, I park at the far space.
I always try to go for shade wherever it is. And, close to the place is always taken. But if there's like way off in the corner of the Capitola Mall, there's the tree and that's where I'm parking. And when I get back to my car, it's cool. So it's, and I haven't used any energy to cool it off. So it hits a couple of things for me. Anyway, thank you very much for the call. I've enjoyed our conversation and okay. I like your attitude. Now all you have to do is get off your attitude and act on it.
Do be half, but the most important thing, what do you want to have?
All right. With those words of wisdom, I'll say goodnight.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that's about all for this week's podcast. Please go to AskDrDawn.com for news about our future plans. For now, this is Dr. Dawn saying so long and stay healthy.
Ask Dr. Dawn is brought to you by Jiva Media. Production and editing by Charles Mansky. Music by John Scoville.